Howdy, Vine Trippers. I wanted to take just a moment to talk to you about the Texas Wine Lover website and their phone app for both iPhones as well as Google devices. You can actually download this app, put it on your phone, or just go to the website if you're not an app person. And if you ever want to go visit some of these great locations that we've been talking about in the podcast, this will give you a great information about the place before you go. And you'll be able to find other wineries in the area. So if you want to make a day of it, go see several other places as well. You can search by region. You can sort the listings, find ones that are kid-friendly, family-friendly, even ones that host RVs. All kinds of different sortable listings you can find there in that app and on the website. You can find other things as well in the area, like restaurants, accommodations, maybe events that are going on at the different wineries. So it's your one-stop resource that goes hand in hand with this podcast to be able to find those great places to go visit. So check out the Texas Wine Lover website. It's txwinelover.com. Or go to their app. You can find it on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store as well. Enjoy your trips among the vines and use that app. Welcome to Texas Under Vine, an exploratory podcast to scout out the best that Texas wine country has to offer. I'm your wine guide, Scott, and I'm here to lead you on an auditory expedition to the vineyards and wineries across the great Lone Star State. Each episode will cover a different vineyard, winery, or wine-related business operating in Texas. You'll hear interviews, descriptions, and details about each location that will excite you to visit and experience them for yourself. Ready to plan a wine tour? Use these episodes to choose the most interesting spots for you and your friends to check out. Most of all, enjoy hearing about the rapidly growing wine industry in the state and what makes our wines and wineries the best. Howdy, fellow Vine Tripper. Welcome to episode 2 for Texas Under Vine. Today, I'm going to cover one of the older wine destinations in the Texas Hill Country, Texas Hills Vineyard. So this vineyard was started back in 1994 by Gary and Kathy Gilstrup. I had a great privilege to be able to sit down with Gary. I consider him kind of an elder statesman of Texas wine as for what he's been doing, and especially in the Hill Country area. Their vineyard is on the east side of Johnson City, actually, about a mile and a half down Ranch Road 2766. But interestingly enough, as I spoke to Gary, I did know this before, but I discovered that he was actually instrumental in helping to start one of the older wine trails in the Texas area called Wine Road 290, which a lot of the vineyards that you've heard of and places that you're familiar with are members, all the way from Johnson City to Fredericksburg. But he started that back in about 1999, and he got together with several of the other wineries and vineyards in that area. There weren't that many at the time, but he got kind of gathered them all together, and he said they had a potluck, all brought covered dishes and sat down at Texas Hills and brainstormed the idea of how they could work together and share their marketing efforts together and create what we know of now as Wine Road 290. So if you've ever seen that trail or heard of that trail or come across it, you can in the back of your mind remember, Gary, Texas Hills Vineyard was instrumental in getting that up and running. A little bit about my visit. So as I went in, as you pull in from the road, the signs are easy to see. You have this nice little long drive down towards where the tasting room is, where you see all of their vines on the left side. Interestingly, Gary is one of those people who kind of bucks the tradition. A lot of the more contemporary winemakers that I've come across so far in Texas are really embracing those varietals that do well in Texas. Some of the Northern Mediterranean, Italy, Spain, Portuguese, even Southern France, Rhone varietals, like Tempranillo and others that do really well here. And he is trying to make wine that customers want. And so many people are familiar with Cabs, they're familiar with Chardonnay and some of those grapes that don't really do as well in Texas. They're harder to grow, but Gary's not afraid of that challenge. And he grows all of those different things to be able to provide what his customers are looking for. But he's got some of the oldest vines in the area actually planted. They bought that property there in 1994 and got it kind of basically opened around 1995. So he started making his wines at that time. They opened up the tasting room to sell wine in 1999 on April 15th and began sharing the fruits of their harvest there that they had been working on at Texas Hills. Like I said, they have a lot of different types of wines. They have whites, reds, some sweets, even some port-style dessert wines. Like I said, with whites, everything from Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, Pinot Grigio. They have a blend. They have an interesting rosé from Sangiovese, which you'll hear a little bit of Gary talk about in the interview, how he makes that. It's really kind of cool. And then they also offer multiple reds. They have a very popular Cabernet Sauvignon called Kick Butt Cab that a lot of the customers really like. I was a big fan of their Cabernet Franc. It's actually the bottle that I purchased for my wine library for Texas Under Vine for this episode. But you'll hear a little bit more about his interesting techniques that he has for making wine. I'll get more into that in a little bit. But it really makes for really tasty wines. They have red blends. They have Malbec, Merlot, Sangiovese, Syrah, Tempranillo. Sweet wines, they have Moscato, Orange Moscato, and they have a sweet red wine called Volare. And then they have a couple of, like I said, dessert wines. He had a wine that he made. It's kind of like a chocolate. Like a chocolate port. Again, the EU does not allow certain places to call things by those names if they're not from that area. Port is one of them. There's a handful of vineyards and places that were making it before the EU made that classification, so they're grandfathered in and can still call their wines a port or a Madeira or different other types of classifications. But they have a sweet wine, a dessert wine that's a kind of a chocolate wine. And Gary told me the story of how it actually ended up a little sweeter than he expected. So he decided to make the dessert wine from it based on its high Brix levels. But he wanted to make a kind of a chocolate dessert wine from it. And so he actually sourced some Venezuelan cacao nibs that he was actually able to use to help make that chocolate port. It's called Lily G, and it's a fan favorite there at the winery. He makes a cool port. We'll talk more about that as well. But he also makes a Madeira. So I'll tell you more about that story after the interview. He told me a little bit about that Madeira. Again, it can't be called that. It's called something different. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about that after the interview. But it's interesting because Gary actually had some time that he spent, you'll hear in the interview, from his background with some Italian and German winemakers, some friends that he made through some trips to Europe, who really influenced his wine style. And he is kind of different from a lot of other winemakers in that he does not use barrels for his fermentation. He uses a process called micro-oxygenation. It was started in the early 90s. It was classified by the EU in around 1996 and is used in a lot of different places. Even Bordeaux, a lot of places use it. One of the big benefits of micro-oxygenation is that you don't have to have a giant barrel room to store all these barrels as you ferment your wine. It's done in the tank, and it uses a process of slowly oxygenating the wine and cause it to get the same type of kind of the round tannins that you might get from barrel aging. But it's done through oxygenation. So it can actually be hard to tell the difference between a wine that's been done in barrels versus one that's been micro-oxygenated. Another benefit of this process is that it speeds up everything. So whereas you might have to barrel age something for 2 or 3 years, he can get that done really quickly through micro-oxygenation. But yeah, so it's got a lot of great advantages. Gary's really embraced that and made that a part of what he does at the Texas Hills Vineyard. They have a lot of merchandise inside the store, the winery. The winery is beautiful when you walk up to it. It does feel a little Tuscan almost in architecture style. As you walk up, lots of places outside to sit and enjoy a glass overlooking the vines. And you walk into this nice little tasting room with a bar inside. And it's got They were preparing some cool cheese boards and things like that when I walked in. Again, lots of merchandise you can buy in there, so you can shop a little bit while you're there. And like I said, they do have some of the oldest vines in the area. So I sat down to talk with Gary for a little while, just about the history, his own personal history and the history of the vineyard, and a little bit about what they do. So instead of me sitting here trying to repeat it, I think you'd probably rather hear from him just a little bit. So let's go ahead and go to that interview and let you hear from Gary and see what he has to say about Texas Hills Vineyard. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you into the wine industry?
It's a long story. I'm a pharmacist, and I programmed a computer to run my pharmacy back in 1973. And the soon-to-be president of IBM walked in one day and said, "Hey, Gary, that's pretty good. Can we sell it for you?" So my wife's also a pharmacist. And so I would leave on, I'd work the two busy days, Saturday and Monday. And then I would take off and go all over North America talking to pharmacists about computers. And I'd sell the software and IBM would sell the hardware. And in the old days, you had to rewrite the software for each new piece of hardware. So we ended up with a software company. The international division found out we were so successful, they decided that they should hire me to keynote their first pharmacy software conference in Strasbourg, France. And I said, "Sure, I'll do it." And they said, "Well, we can't pay you because we sell your software. But we'll give you the week in the host country on our nickel, and we'll pay your expenses." So that meant, in the old days, IBM was pretty wealthy, so that meant first-class airfare, five-star hotel, somebody that spoke English to take me around for a week. So the first year, France had it, so I opted to go to Bordeaux for a week. And then the next day, they invited me back the next year, and then that was Italy had it, so Tuscany, here I come. And then the next year, Germany had it. I went to the Mosel area, central Germany, where the Riesling is dominant. I always would have dinner at a winery with the winemaker and got to be very good friends, and still am, actually, with the guy in Tuscany and the guy in Germany, and Dr. Lucen out of Germany, and he's world-class. His Riesling is everywhere, and Paolo De Marchi out of San Donato, which is between Florence and Siena. And I've got his soil analysis, exactly what ours is here. And so that's why we do a lot of Tuscan things and themes, if you would. And he's helped me a lot with what to do. But we visit him a lot. In fact, that's where I met Dr. Lucen the second time, was stopped at Paolo's. I called Paolo from Florence. I said, "Paolo, I'm in town. I want to come out tomorrow." He said, no, come Thursday. Dr. Lucen's going to be here." And I said, "Who the hell is Dr. Lucen?" He's the big Riesling producer out of Germany. So we sat down with Dr. Lucen and his wife, Dr. Eva Lucen, who's also an enologist. My wife and I and the Lucens had another couple with them in their big Mercedes. And Paolo's son had just graduated from enology school, so Paolo and his son were there. We tasted 5 years of five wines in the vertical. I don't care if you're spitting, that's a lot of wine. And Dr. Lucen and I were sitting side by side, and we got to be very good friends. And I've got Paolo on videotape in 1992 saying, "Gary, when you do Sangiovese, do neutral barrels, neutral barrels." Okay. And so we get to his Sangiovese was his third wine that he poured, and the first two were just delightful. The third one was so oaky, you couldn't hardly stand it. So Ernest and I are we're at this level now, you know. Ernest said, "That's a lot of oak." I said, "Paolo, when you do Sangiovese, use neutral barrels." He looked at me, he looked at his shoes, he looked back at his son, looked back at me, and he says, "I understand. I'll sell it to the Americans."
Yeah.
But that's the kind of friends I made, and Paolo has helped me a little bit. Our Sangiovese wins gold medals all the time, and when you get cold at night, what do? You put on a sweater or a jacket, right? And what does a wine grape do? Puts on thicker skins. Well, we don't have cool nights here in the Hill Country, so even though I've got the same soil, I wasn't getting the great color in my Sangiovese. So Paula says, just let the cap form, suck off a third of it, and that gives you more skin contact, and you make a dry rosé out of that, out of the other. And that's, I've done that every year now. And so now I'm winning gold medals with my Sangiovese.
So you get two blends out of one.
I do, and our Sangiovese is quite nice. This year I'm disappointed with the color in it, but it, the flavor's just really good. And it's got all the characteristics of Sangiovese. It's got the nice acid, so it goes with your hamburgers and salads of summer. And it's just a nice wine.
And then, so after that time you spent in Europe, what made you decide to dive into a vineyard? And
well, we went ahead and had a nice run with the computer, and we ended up moving when they deregulated the airlines flying. I lived 8 miles from Joplin, Missouri, and in southeast Kansas. And whenever they deregulated the airlines, I was driving to Kansas City or Tulsa to get a flight to Dallas, Chicago, or Atlanta to go where I was going. And we got five kids, and I needed to be home to get bleacher butt. And they're all five athletes. And so we sold the pharmacy and moved the five kids and the software company to Colleyville so I could be next to DFW Airport. And in the old days, I could be on a flight in 20 minutes, and that was nice. I could be home at night to get bleacher butt. So then we, last kid got out of college, and we said, we sold the software company, and we said, what are we going to do with this money to keep these kids from inheriting it? Let's start a winery. So if I'm doing a talk downstairs, I would point to the tanks. I'd say, see those tanks? Those are not little tanks. Those are, you know, 2,000-gallon tanks. Most of them are. And they're 10,000 or more a piece. And oh, by the way, that trailer out there with a mobile bottling line in it is $330,000. And look at that press there. That filter is, when I bought it in 95, was $46,000, and it's stainless steel. So it's worth more than that now. So we got rid of the kids' inheritance pretty quick. And now they're just trying to drink up their inheritance.
There you go.
So anyway, that's how we got started. I got interested. My major interest at that time in wine was in white wines, and when I first started the touring, and I got in the Strasbourg area, they had a product called Tokay Pinot Gris, which they can't use the word Tokay anymore because that's a protected name. But unfortunately, I named my Pinot Gris Pinot Grigio, and people expect to have an Italian-style Pinot Grigio. Mine's a French-style of Pinot Gris, and it's a lot different flavor.
So how long has this location been here?
Well, we bought the dirt in 94, built the building in 95 and 96, and made wine here in 97, opened the door in 99.
Okay.
So I had to give some time in the bottle after the first harvest.
And that's about the time, 99, I think, is when you said you started the Wine Road Cooperation.
Well, what it was kind of interesting. We started the wine trail, and then it started growing so fast that everybody that wasn't on 290 started complaining. And I thought, you know what? The meat and potatoes is the 290 trail. So yeah. I started that trail as well, the Wine Road 290, which mm-hmm. we end up calling it the Fredericksburg Wine Road 290. To take advantage of their stuff, and it was all a ploy to get marketing done, and and the only thing we really wanted to do from the beginning was have a website and a brochure, and that was it. They've morphed into doing a lot more than that now, but yeah, it's really interesting. The first day of the wine trail was the first day we were open.
So it seems like that was planned.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Marketed perfectly. Is there some sort of a story behind the name? Why did you choose Texas Hills Vineyard?
Well, at that time, there was not a winery in Texas that had Texas in the name. And as you well know, Texans are really proud people. And I thought, you know, we're in the Hill Country and we need a Texas name. So let's do Texas Hills Vineyard. And if you look at our label, if you're driving from the Marble Falls to the south, that's the hills are what you see, and then we put vines in front of them.
That's the artwork that you have
on the label. And my cousin actually did the artwork for us.
Where do you source all your grapes? I know you got vines here, but do you source them all here?
About 70% of our production comes from here. Neil Newsom, the oldest commercial vineyard in the state, is he and I have a joint venture. He gives me the grapes, I make the wine, and I give him a percent of what I sell it for.
Oh, cool.
Very unusual relationship. And we started with two different wines, Orange Muscat and Cabernet. And 1 year he didn't have any crop because of they had a hailstorm problem. And so he still got a check every month. And he said, hey, let's do that with five more. So we added five more wines and our grapes. Now I'm down to about two or three that I get from him. I've had too much production.
And then do you process everything here at this site?
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit unique in that whenever I'm doing a tour or something, I say, do you see any barrels? And no, you don't see any barrels. Well, what's a barrel do for wine? I don't know. It's a flavor. No, it's not the flavor. It's the oxygen coming through causes big, long chain, ugly hydrocarbons to link together, those tannins that suck the moisture out of your mouth. And so when that happens, can you imagine me using a computer? Well, I've got a computer that's called micro-oxygenation. I dose the oxygen in at the rate I tell it to. So we do three times a barrel for 3 months, two times a barrel for 3 months, and equal to a barrel till we bottle it. And so our wine, tannin-wise, tastes like it's been in the barrel for 2 or 3 years. I specialize in soft tannins, and so that's why our cab wins gold, our Cabernet Franc's a double gold winner because of the soft tannin.
Howdy, Vine Trippers. Did you know that I now have a merchandise store for Texas Under Vine? I only have a handful of limited items, but you can go check those out and wear your Texas Under Vine swag if you'd like to tell all your friends about the great wine locations we have here in Texas and maybe get them interested in the podcast as well. So there are things like t-shirts, there's a hoodie, there's a beanie, a ball cap, things like that. But one of the most exciting things I have right now is my limited time offer t-shirt. That's my season one t-shirt. So this is your Tasting Through Texas, Texas Under Vine season one t-shirt. It's only going to be available for a little short amount of time. On the back, it has all the different locations, like a band tour t-shirt. So this is a limited time item, and you can go out and get it now. And one of the great things about that t-shirt is a portion of every sale goes to support the Texas Hill Country Winery Scholarship Fund. So you know that by buying that t-shirt, you're also investing in the growing and flourishing of an amazing wine industry here in Texas and all of those people that are going to come and make it even better. Check out that merchandise store. It's on my website at texasundervine.com. Just go up to the top. You'll see the link for the merchandise store. So it gets that almost rounded flavor that you get from the aging.
I get the same flavor as a barrel. And then I use oak chips to give the oak just a natural amount of oak flavor. I don't want to taste the oak. I just want that little spicy nuance at the finish. And that's where with American oak, that's what I get.
So what are your favorite wines that you make?
Oh, you don't ask a daddy which baby he likes. That's not fair.
Okay, well, you talked about your Sangiovese.
And our Cabernet Sauvignon, we've won a gold medal against international competition, meaning California, since 2001, every vintage since 2001. And so we do make good cabs here. And I don't get what most Texans get, which is a vegetative taste. I don't get the green pepper. I get a nice rounded blackberry, loganberry flavor, and soft tannins.
So if I'm not going to ask Daddy what his favorite baby is, what are the customer's favorite babies typically?
Well, the number one wine in our sales is our Kick Butt Cab. Mm-hmm. Second most popular wine is a wine called Volari, which is a sweet wine. And I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I don't make them syrupy sweet. Our sweet wines are about 5% residual sugar is all. So they're just sweet enough to soften them a bit. And they're nice transitional wine. And Volari is a dry red, or is a sweet red wine that I left a little bit sweet. So the alcohol levels are are at only 12% because I left it a little sweet.
Yeah. If a listener wanted to come in to do a tasting, what are the things that they should know? Fees, hours, do they need reservations, things like that?
Well, we're only open on days that end in Y. So we're closed 4 days a year, and we close early on the eves of Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving. And when I'm saying early, I say 2:30. And we charge $20. They get their pick of whether they want to do a dry wine tasting, a sweet wine tasting, or a port tasting. And they pay $20 for that tasting. And if they buy three bottles, they get that comp, that tasting comp. And so that's the only way that we can reward them other than joining the wine club.
Do they need reservations?
Do not need reservations. If you called and asked if you need reservations, I would tell you the only thing you need is the corners of your mouth turned up.
So what other attractions or amenities do you have here besides coming to do a tasting?
Well, we have a real vineyard here that you can look at while you're on the patio, or we have tables under the trees, and it's just a beautiful sight to have a picnic, bring a picnic, or you can buy a cheese plate. Or we're not trying to sell. We're trying to just get you to enjoy.
Do you offer a wine club? Is that something that...
You got a beautiful wine club, and one of the unique features about our wine club is I'll send that month's... Okay, our wine club, they can pick how frequently and how many bottles they want to get. So we're shipping every month except the hot months of June, July, and July, August, and September, and we don't ship December. Any other time, if we are shipping to you, you'd get an email telling you what my pick is. But if you don't like that pick, you can call or you can send an email back and change to anything you want. And we have people that get all kick butt gab. We get people that get the same thing every time. If they want, that's what the name of the game is, make the customer a customer.
So are you family friendly, under 21 allowed, or just 21 and above?
We're friendly to dogs, kids, and mother-in-laws.
What about maximum group sizes for doing tastings or things like that?
We'd like to have if you got more than 10, we would like to have a reservation. Just a heads up, so I've got enough staff to make your visit here nice. It's all about what we want to make you happy when you come in.
Yeah. What would be the best time to visit? What are your busy and slower seasons?
Well, it's Saturday and Sunday is always the busiest days, but we're open every day, and people that aren't working every day would be better off to come on during the week.
Okay. So slower time during the week, so you get more of a personalized experience and the more intimate.
Yeah. And we recommend that. And one thing I will mention is that we have so many dry wines that we split them into three groups, and we have a different set every week for 3 weeks, and we alternate. But when you get a dry, you get our selection of a complimentary tasting or a complimentary group, and it'll always include one or two white wines, and the remainder will be red wines.
For some reason, someone wasn't able to come here. Is there, do you do distribution? Is there a way for people to be able to taste your wines outside of?
Well, I've made a few mistakes in my business life, and one of them, it wasn't really a mistake, but it was a, it turned out that it affected us, as I fired my distributor that I'd had for 8 years right before COVID. And so we're just now starting to interview with this distribution again. So no, we ship all over, but we don't have any other outside sources.
But you're looking into that as a possible future.
Yeah, the Lowe's grocery, small grocery chain, is we got 13 of their stores that have our wines,
and
they've got, each one of them has different wines. So.
Well, what kind of plans do you have for future growth or anything? Do you have any plans to expand or to offer any new things?
No, I don't. We actually have started renting the patio. I never did weddings because I don't like mothers of the bride. And so we didn't have weddings, but we've had a few in the last year here now, and they like having it next to the vineyard, overlooking the vineyard on the grass. We've had two weddings there, but we have a maximum on our patio of 60 people. So they could not have a dinner or anything over 60. So that's the limitation that they would have.
What, in your opinion, what's the number one thing that sets your location apart that would draw people to want to come visit Texas Hills Vineyard?
Well, I think it's really a vineyard and a winery, and you can tell that when you're there. And it's a beautiful place to sit and have a glass of wine or to have a tasting.
Yeah, beautiful grounds and everything. I love the entryway. It's very beautiful coming in.
Yeah, and it's... you know, we've been here long enough that we understand the public and how to deal with everything properly.
Yeah.
And like I said, we're in the people business. We just happen to make wine. We have been at it for a long time, and I'm very pleased that we've got wine that suits almost everybody's taste. You know, we very seldom have somebody say they don't like our wines. These wines aren't very good. They normally just the opposite. You got the best wines in the Hill Country.
Well, there you go. Gary and his staff were a delight to work with, and he loved telling stories as he poured me glass after glass of these incredible wines that I got to try. He told me this one story. It was kind of funny about this one wine that he had and how the Brix level got way too high on it. And so he decided that he was trying to figure out what to do with it. He knew it would be a dessert wine. And he said he was friends with the winemaker at Hawk Winery, and they're famous for making an actual Madeira. And so he called him and said, you know what? I'm calling in a favor. I want you to teach me how to make Madeira-style wine. So he went and learned that process and came back and created one. Again, due to the EU's naming regulations, it can't be called Madeira. So he decided to name it after the coordinates of the winery. So this particular dessert wine is called North 30.27, West 98.38. Interesting name for a wine. I don't think I've ever seen one named anything like that before. But that is their Madeira style dessert wine that they have. It was really good. I had to buy a bottle of it to take back to my wife to try because it was so tasty. It's funny because one of the girls who was working at the tasting room during the time teased him just a little bit and said that he is known to keep a bottle of that in his truck as a way to find his way back home in times of need. So if he ever gets lost and he needs the coordinates, he can always just look at that bottle and put that into his GPS to find his way home. So make sure to check out their website. It's www.texashillsvineyard.com. Gary and his staff are incredibly welcoming, and they want you to have the best wine experience possible. Be sure to go by, try some of his bottles, and I challenge you to see if you can taste a difference between wine that you're familiar with that's been barrel fermented and what he has done with his micro oxygenation process. And then after you tasted those and you decided to buy some bottles, make sure and tell him you heard about them on this podcast. So this winds us down for this episode. I'm off to hit the road and experience more great wine destinations in Texas. If you're curious as to where I'm headed, become a subscriber to the Patreon. The Patreons of this podcast get early access to sneak peeks into where I'm headed for next episodes. And you can also get things like photos from the winery, video walkthroughs. There's a bunch of extra benefits and bonuses that you don't get from just the regular podcast if you come help me support it. Because, again, it's expensive to do podcasts. But if you like what you're hearing and you'd love to see more episodes about these destinations, especially ones near you all over Texas, consider becoming a patron of the show. And it's just kind of my way of saying thank you by giving you all this bonus stuff there on Patreon. You could find that link to my Patreon page on the website, TexasUndervine.com. So subscribe to the podcast, follow my socials to be notified whenever the next episode is posted. Until next time, happy trails and bottoms up, y'all. Thanks for listening to Texas Undervine. we strive to provide you with the best information about wine businesses all over Texas. Be sure to check out our website at texasundervine.com and follow us on our socials at texasundervine to stay up on all the upcoming episodes. Please email us with any suggestions or feedback. Also, contact us if you're interested in donating, sponsoring, or advertising on the podcast, just to help us cover our expenses and bring even more great info to you in future episodes. Above all, travel safely, and most especially, drink responsibly. Vine Trippers, have I got a deal for you. So if you haven't checked out the Texas Wine Club yet, you have to go check it out. So you can get wine clubs at all of these different great wineries that I've talked about in the episodes. But if you can't get a chance to get to those places and you want to sample some of those various wines, this is the perfect fit for this podcast. So I've partnered with Texas Wine Club. If you go to their website, they scour the whole state. They choose great wines from all over the Texas wineries, and they put them together into packs that they ship out every quarter. You could pick out a package of 3, 6, or 9 bottles, and every quarter you can get a taste of different wineries throughout Texas without having to travel to them. So if you've wanted to taste some of the great wine I've talked about on this podcast, here's your chance without having to travel. So what you're going to want to do is go to www.txwine.com and pick your package that you want to try. And when you put in my code, Texas Undervine, that's all one word, TexasUnderVine, as your coupon code, you'll get $20 off your purchase. So head on over there. You can also find the link in the show notes here for this podcast and go check out Texas Wine. They're a perfect fit with this podcast. So go drink some great wine.